from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Get to Sal Capaccio momentarily here on the Wester Hotline. Maybe I sell by my James Cook pick over the weekend. My first James Cook pick in any of my billion fantasy leagues that I'm in. I'm actually only in 10 this year. Only 10. It was like 17 2 years ago, so I'm trying to trim little by little once in a while here. We got the GR League coming up in a week or two. So fantasy season, and if you didn't have your draft this last weekend, I mean, it better be this weekend coming up, because we are only, what are we, 10, Josh, 10 days? Did we figure this out earlier? 10 days from the opener?
Actually.
11 days from the opener. The Chiefs-Ravens opener.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we are 13 days from Bills and Cardinals.
Yep.
That doesn't seem like that lines up. Thursday to
no,
Sunday?
It does.
I think it's got to be 10.
Today.
Oh, here we go with the, if you, we got, now, let me get
right,
Sal on
right
away. If you
don't count today,
if we count
10.
Today. Sal, what's your theory on that? Do we count today?
Of course not. One day from now is tomorrow, 24 hours.
Right. All right.
I mean,
so
what are we doing here? There's a you and I debate. This funny thing is, I don't count today, but I do count the last day. You, I think, were in the boat where you do count today, but you don't count the last day, which is kind of funny. So it all worked out, even though we both shaved one off from either end.
I think I was convinced. I think maybe I did say that. But I think I was convinced by you or just others that it makes more sense that you wouldn't count today.
I think it depends on the time of day, though. Like, it's early in the morning today.
No. Now we're
whatever. Nah, we're not getting into the here. It is early morning. Good morning. I'm actually down in Olean today.
Okay.
I am the MC for the Coaches versus Cancer dinner and golf tournament, and had a dinner last night. It's foggy down here. It's going to be a nice day today, but they do a great job. And you know, last week I had Mark Schmidt on to talk a couple weeks ago to talk about it. Head basketball coach, you know, St. Bonaventure, and it's a great cause. It's awesome. It's one of my favorite days of the year to be down here. And you know, we live in this football world. I do, and sports, of course. But I grew up such a big college basketball fan, Joe. And
yeah,
as you know, and like to be down here with these college basketball coaches. Seth Greenberg, actually, I'm taking him from where I am right now to the hotel, from the hotel to the, like, driving him over at ESPN and USF basketball coach. Like, just to get to know these people and hang out with them and hear stories is just super cool.
Yeah, awesome. So the dinner was last night. Is the golf today?
Yeah, and then so you usually do one day of golf and dinner, but this year they broke it up. Last night was a smaller dinner. Today is golf, and then a smaller reception after. So it's kind of like a That way you don't have to, we're not there like too late after golf because you know how those things run sometimes.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, stay cool because I know it's going to be, you're not as worried about it, but it's going to be in the 80s today and tomorrow. Anyways, let's get to Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline. Let's get to the preseason finale against Carolina, Sal, and then a little bit on what tomorrow will be with the 53-man roster that will have to be in, roster cuts due by tomorrow. So starting with the game, what stood out to you? I know it was a lot of backups for the Bills. The Panthers played their starters at least a little bit early on. Did that look about how you thought it would? Carolina having their number ones against the Bills backups where they seem like they move the ball pretty easily?
Yeah, I was hoping the Bills might get a stop in there, but look, I think they forced a third down or two maybe. I think it was a fourth down in there, right? So I think all in all, you know, thinking back, I mean, the Bills made them work, which is good. It wasn't like they went down the field relatively super easy. That they did get down the field. They did score a touchdown. You know, Bryce Young had some nice numbers. You know, for me, it was more about evaluation of certain players. So, you know, Joe Andreessen can back up, you know, what he did last week, seeing, and then for me, like, who's playing at what time of the game. Maybe that's an indication on where they stand in the pecking order and, you know, figuring out. And I posted my own 53-man roster projection yesterday as well. And, you know, I just take a look at what happens in that game to see what the Bills feel. But, yeah, it went pretty much the way I thought. And, you know, honestly, I thought the offense actually played better than I thought, given the people that were out there throughout the day.
I was going to say, like, they completed passes. Like, both Ben DiNucci and Anthony Brown only had one incompletion on 12 passes. So that's where I wanted to get to eventually with you is, did the quarterbacks look competent enough to be able to evaluate the pass catchers in this game? Because I don't know how many jobs you would even think would still be available, Sal, at receiver or maybe at the end at the tight end position or running back. But the quarterbacks were out there, like, they looked pretty willing to throw the ball. I know Shavers had a target in the end zone that was pretty close to connecting but didn't. So whether it's Shavers or Shorter, do you feel like there was enough there on Saturday to get an evaluation?
I don't think there was anything that would change the coaches or front office's mind, if that's a good way to answer it. Whatever evaluation they had on those guys, I don't think you come out with a different evaluation. I guess no would be the answer, but I don't know how much they could have done to really get an evaluation. To me, Joe, the evaluation was already in. The evaluation was done. They had to see those guys go out there and whatever. It's probably more of a like confirmation than anything, whatever they're looking at. And we don't know what they're thinking about. It feels like, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, the fact that Sean said, you know, him and Curtis Samuel would be ready for week one, just an indication that maybe that's what they're thinking, that he'll be on the team anyway. Right, I don't know that, but I think he will be. You know, what could a receiver do to kind of, you know, replace anyone? I guess the only debate would be maybe, you know, people think maybe Shavers or Hamler. Hamler had a nice game, and I gave him an arrow up because of just his willingness to go in and play running back and do what he did. But it feels like that's already been kind of determined, right? I don't know how much he could have really done to change that.
Yeah, this is kind of how the third preseason game can go, Sal, where he went into the game at running back late when Frank Gore had his injury, and my immediate thought was, we've been wondering, like, can somebody else on the roster do some of the Curtis Samuel stuff, like playing the backfield? So my first thought was, oh, wait, this is good. Like, maybe this gives him, because I like Hamler as an idea, maybe this gives him a shot at making the team more than I thought he had. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, though, he's the guy they put in at the end of the preseason finale. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing late into the fourth quarter. So I was I was debating internally whether even that was even a good sign for his chances of making it.
It's a good question. It's a good point. I thought that too, but I mean, like, they had to have somebody, right? And, you know, somebody who's maybe carried the ball a little bit or understands how to take a handoff. And, you know, KJ Hamler to me is, let's remember, I mean, he was on the Colts practice squad all year last year.
Right.
And then they didn't offer him a futures contract. I don't think the Bills, you know, if they release KJ Hamler as another team, you know, just grabbing him, it probably doesn't feel like that, right? So I think that's a player that they probably feel comfortable in their organization in some capacity. He could be another practice squad player, and guess what? Now we know, like, he's here, he's willing to do whatever we ask, he's going to be a real good, you know what that is? I'll tell you what that is. Mm. That's a great, and I don't mean to be disparaging when I say this, please don't think this way, but it's a great example of how, hey, that guy could be used as a scout team running back or something else on scout team to really help us, right? Like, that's a role he can play until maybe there's a spot on the 53 through the year for him, because I just don't see him making it. His competition, you know, people asked me yesterday about him versus Shavers, and we just talked about it. His competition is Daquan Hardy. His competition really isn't Tyrell Shavers.
And at this point, I mean, there's other things to get to from the game, Sal, but Hardy made a good decision in that game, right? Like, I think he's the returner, no?
Let me tell you about that. So Sean McDermott talked about decision-making with Daquan Hardy. He just has to button up the decision-making, you know, and that's the thing you think about, especially in that stadium. So he has the one punt. He's standing around the four. Ball's coming. He lets it go in the end zone, which is a good decision. Joe, I'm telling you, the sideline reacted as if he scored a touchdown. Like, they were so happy for him just for deciding to not field the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, way to go, Day-Day. Way to go, Day. That's what they call him, Day-Day. And I think they all understood. They want him to make this team, but they have to make sure. And they know what's on the line for him to make those decisions. And then Sean talked about the decision-making as well after the game. I just think Daquan Hardy is on this team as the returner and a depth defensive back.
Yeah, he got a lot of run as an outside corner in this preseason also. And I was looking at some of the PFF grades earlier today. Like, he was targeted 8 times, and I think only allowed 2 catches for 8 yards maybe. So like his numbers even on defense looked pretty strong at the end of it. Sal, one other player I wanted to ask you from Saturday's game, or actually we could go two. Frank Gore Jr. and Joe Andreessen. Those were two names that I was looking to see more of on Saturday. I mean, Gore put up the numbers. Andreessen maybe wasn't as good as Pittsburgh. Would you agree with those two analysis and maybe what their chances are on tomorrow?
Yeah, let's start with Andreessen. I mean, he didn't have the kind of game he did against Pittsburgh, but the bar was high, right? I mean, he still had 8 tackles, I think. We had 12 against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He played into the second half. You know, with Joe, I think it's just, yeah, you want to see, you'd love to see the kind of game he put together against Pittsburgh. But, I mean, there were a couple instances where there was some miscommunication on defense. I think, you know, Joe was involved in that, a couple of passes. Those things are going to happen. I don't know how much you want to, you know, go that far and say, well, you know, can he handle the coverage aspect? Those things are going to happen, especially against a starting offense and Bryce Young and a bunch of guys on defense that don't normally play together necessarily. Those things are going to happen. But for Joe, for me, it was always, is he lining up people correctly? Is he talking? Is he communicating pre-snap? And I think all those things, he's checked all the boxes, right? So now you leave it in the hands of what do they need. And look, they've already cut two linebackers. One of them is Deion Jones, where people thought, okay, is that a guy he's fighting with? No longer, right? Deion Jones, Shane Simon. So, you know, we're getting down here to every guy that leaves, it's not Joe Andreessen. That's another spot for him. I have him making it on my 53. I think he's done enough to show that they don't want to lose him, and they feel that they can develop him, and he can be a player in this league, both as a backup linebacker and a special teams guy. As far as Frank Gore Jr. is concerned, I mean, he was fantastic. The vision, his vision is incredible. I mean, the hole closes up. He bounces it to the edge. He gets outside. It was great. The issue with him, Joe, is, though, that there's too many guys in front of him. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, James Cook and Ray Davis are on this team, and I think Ty Johnson's on this team. Ty Johnson had a couple kick returns. He didn't play on offense. You know what that tells me? They just needed him to get a couple of reps because he hasn't had the ball in his hand a lot, but he's going to be on the team. That's what that tells me.
Right.
So those are your three running backs. The other thing is, if people are worried about, well, you're going to lose Frank Gore to waivers, I guess, maybe. Raheem Blackshear was claimed off waivers 2 years ago. Remember that?
Yes.
Right? When the Bills released him, he was on the Panthers yesterday. So no doubt it could happen. But, Joe, most teams have a guy like Frank Gore Jr. that they're debating, just like the Bills are. Hmm. And unless they feel Frank is just so much better than that guy, they're going to err on taking their guy because he knows the playbook, and you have to get a guy in to learn all the playbook. And remember, if you claim a guy, you've got to put him on your 53. You can't claim him and put him on your practice squad.
Yeah, there was a lot of teams have a third string, fourth string running back that put up big yardage in the preseason that they would be debating. Another minute or two here with Sal Capaccio. I heard you, Sal, and Matt Bove talking on your podcast, It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, this morning or last night, about the idea of trades before tomorrow's cut day or maybe around the same time. And I think you were the one who mentioned Elam as an idea. And he had a strong camp. And again, I was looking at some of the numbers. Like he had a good preseason too. He was only targeted 3 times on a lot of coverage snaps. So I think that's a good thing, right? When you don't notice him. But say like every other corner around him, like Ingram, Hardy, we talked about, Douglas, Benford, like all the other corners had really strong preseasons too. Mm-hmm. Where I look at that room now and go, I don't know, like, You've said this. If Ingram's going to push him to be the number 3, I don't know how much value he's providing you as a fourth corner if you think you can get I don't know. That's the question here, though. Like, what do you think you could get, right?
Well, there's a couple of things here, and you brought one up a little earlier. So let's just say, okay, Elam's looks fine. Like, you can – I think you're comfortable with putting him on the field now, right? Like, okay, can do that. It's not necessarily perfect, but okay, and it's strong. He's taken a step up, which is really nice. But I actually question if he's number three or four. I think Jamarcus Ingram may have still outplayed him, despite the fact that he's played pretty well. And I think Jamarcus Ingram has earned his way, not only as the number four corner, but maybe the number three corner, the way they feel about him. And, Joe, what you said earlier, the fact that they used Daquan Hardy outside a lot this camp in preseason just gets me a little more towards, okay, like, are you thinking about him being that? Because Daquan Hardy wouldn't be the backup nickel. That's Cam Lewis's spot, right?
Yeah.
And then, honestly, look, if there's one guy on this team, if you said to me, give me one guy who could make the team that no one's really talking about, I wonder if Tecori Couch has a little bit of a look at nickel. He was all over the field yesterday. I like that. I think they like him a lot. So when it starts to get crowded, now, granted, he's probably not. He's probably a practice squad guy. So what I'm saying, though, is I'm looking at how they treated Daquan Hardy, and I'm wondering, is that because maybe they want to make sure they're buttoned up there if they wanted to move off of Elam in some sort of trade?
Yeah, we'll let you go with this. Do you think the price would be around what Dotson went for, where you give a team a third round pick or a day three pick back, and maybe you're able to squeeze out a day two pick?
Maybe. I think that'd be a little bit, probably much to ask. I'm not sure. It's a good question, though. Yeah. I don't know. And look, I mean, the chances to actually trade him are probably very minimal. I just look at the roster and think, like, is he truly your number three? Is he your number four? Is Daquan Hardy in there? And where do you fit him?
Right.
And given the way his career's gone, is it time to say, you know, maybe this just something we have to think about? So I don't know what the price would be. It's very interesting. And if it's not what you would want it to be, then you don't do it, because I think at least it's a position where, hey, you've trained this guy. He knows your system. And, you know, you also don't want to give him away for nothing, obviously.
Right. All right, Sal, tomorrow is cut day. Maybe we'll see some more today, but otherwise usually they leak out tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah, for sure. We might see more. We might get more today because the team they have until tomorrow at 4 p.m. But we've seen around the league this happening, and you know, especially if you're a guy, maybe a veteran, they might give you a little chance to kind of hook on. Because remember, anybody released with less than 4 years experience goes on waivers, but they don't go on waivers until tomorrow. Joe, let's just say a guy today in his second year gets released, his waivers don't start till tomorrow at 4 p.m. So it's not like he's on waivers today. But anybody released today, you know, they can start shopping around and, you know what the situation is. They can't also sign until after that, but at least they can feel out. And sometimes you want to give those guys chances like that.
Sal Capaccio. All right, thanks, Sal. We'll chat tomorrow.
You got it, buddy.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Coaches versus cancer today, so very cool. And also golf today, golf tomorrow for me in the warmth. Where are my quarter zip rounds? Come on. I played a scramble yesterday. Scramble's the best golf format. The most fun.
I think it could be best, too. It is very fun, but I think...
I don't know why I made the point to differentiate those two things. I feel like I want to, though. But it doesn't matter. I think it's the most... For me, personally, I love a scramble. I love the strategy, the thinking, the decision-making of whose shot to take. Oh, do I like this putt? Well, you're a little further away, but... You're putting downhill. I'm an extra 3 feet, but I'm putting uphill. I think you'd rather be putting uphill. Oh,
there is lot more of scrutiny, though. Like, if you don't have honest players, into that before.
Golf's it's an honor sport.
Oh, I know.
And you could cheat in any format, right?
Right. But I feel like
stroke
scramble.
Play, like, oh, I got a bogey there, when we know you got a double bogey because you didn't count that practice swing that you accidentally hit the ball on or whatever.
I feel like scramble can get a little dicey sometimes, though.
I've never had a problem with that. We do a scramble at our fantasy league every year, and I've never had a problem with that. The other thing that's good about a scramble that I like, not everybody plays golf all the time. So if, you know, you're getting together with a group and not everybody plays golf all the time. Maybe it's your second round of the year, third round of the year. Maybe you're someone who, you know, you usually shoot in the hundreds, but you're playing against a couple guys who shoot in the 80s. You know, throw it into a scramble format, and now everybody feels important. Everybody's shots matter. I like the strategy of, you know, if you're the better player, you go last. you know what? Here, it's a par 5. We're 235 away. Here, you hit a nice 9-iron down the middle. Hit a nice layup shot. If it goes well, I'll swing for the fences. Because what's the downside at that point? Versus if I go first or someone else goes first, and then now you have to hit a good shot, you know, now the pressure being on is tough. Oh, scramble is so good. Team golf in general is good, but scramble. I like going second. I do like going second. I'm definitely someone that tries to come up with shots when I don't need to. Yesterday I had one of my buddies, hey, you chip out. We were like kind of in the rough. It's like, but a bad lie. Like, here, you put the ball over here. We didn't have a shot right at the flag. Put the ball right over like 10 yards from the green. And if you do that, I'm going to try to driver off the deck this thing, roll it under the tree, and bounce 100 yards straight and roll up. I did not pull that off, by the way. It actually went very, very poorly. Brian Koziel is calling in. He's got a thought on this. Morning, Brian.
Good morning. I'm actually on my way to coach the first golf practice of the season for Sweet Home, where I'm coaching. But
okay.
all high school sports start today, fall-wise, so good luck to all the coaches and athletes going today. But I heard your golf format.
Yeah.
So, and I heard then Josh talk about cheating and scrambles. So I'll tell you my favorite one is actually the two-man scramble.
Yes, that's what we did yesterday for the first time.
Yeah,
we had usually done three-man scrambles, but we did two-man scrambles yesterday.
Yes, because you have another twosome playing in your group.
Yeah.
So there is, in some sense, there's a little policing going on to make sure that there's not a lot of shadiness going on. But at the same time, you still have that fun of the two-man scramble. Also, you are definitely hitting more balls in a two-man scramble that count. You know, like in a four-man, sometimes maybe you have one guy that's either a lot better or a lot worse, and maybe you kind of feel bad, like, man, this guy's, we never use his shot, or maybe you're that guy, you feel like you're not contributing.
Yeah.
In a two-man, you're invested. So
yeah.
I like the two-man scramble quite a bit. And then this way, too, you feel like the score is very authentic because there's another group there watching you. So really, the cheating aspect kind of goes away.
Not only that, you get more of a live strategy, like, what did the other twosome do in our foursome? You know what I mean? Like, we used one of those apps where, like, we have a leaderboard. So the group ahead of us, Brian, like, we knew what they were, but we didn't know what they did on the hole until they plugged the score in, and then we'd see it, you know, maybe by the time we were hitting our third shot. Maybe we were on the green by that point even. But if you're playing with another twosome, like, we were tied with them on the front nine, and, like, we knew, like, oh, they birdied this hole. Just keep that in mind. Like, we don't want to be too conservative here because they're playing really well. Yeah, two-man scramble. I agree with that, too, because if you have two good players in a four-man scramble and then, you know, someone's at the bottom end of that, like, how many shots do they get used? They might feel like it's not even worth it to play.
Yeah, like, there's some formats, obviously, where, like, you know, if you're playing four people where, oh, you have to use so many people's drives so often, and then there's a little strategy in that. But I feel like there can be, you know, you could play two or three holes at a time where maybe your shot doesn't count, and it feels like you're much more invested when it's a two-man. So that's my favorite. I know there's other formats you can play, like a shamble where everybody hits their drive and you pick the best one, and then you play your own ball in,
right,
where you have a team score and an individual score. Obviously, you can just play best ball where you're playing your own ball, but
right.
I know for tournaments, sometimes it's more fun to do other things. But, yeah, the two-man scramble, I did it one time, and I thought it was awesome because I felt like I was essentially in on every decision and every shot, but at the same time, you felt like the score was really, really legit because there was another twosome in your group watching you.
Yeah, we were having a very hard time coming up with balanced teams yesterday, by the way. So we're like, should we include handicap? Should we do this? My idea was, why don't we take, because we had one too many people that were like all at the same handicap. So I'm like, why don't we put the two of the best players together and they play best ball and everybody else does scramble. That was our idea. I don't know what you would call that. That was just basically a problem that came up. But we got there. All right, Brian. Yeah. Well, you're on your way to practice?
Yep. Our right. first day of tryouts today, so it'll be fun.
All yeah. right. Have fun. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. All right. Enjoy your day.
Thanks, Brian. Brian Koziel on the Wester hotline there. Look, he called impromptu Wester, double Wester hotline segment. You got to love it. I can't wait for fall golf. I can't wait for fall golf. Interesting from Sal there on the Elam trade idea. I do want to, let's talk about corner when we come back, because not even just corner. Trades. What is available out there? Who could there be a player for player idea with an Elam trade? Because we've come up with some in the past. Dotson was one of them. We at least mentioned at some point an idea of trading Kyrie Elam for John Dotson straight up. Hey, you're struggling first for our struggling first. Dotson already got moved, though. Is there another guy like that where you could kind of take Elam and flip that talent to another position? I got some ideas for that. Steve in Texas, if you hang on hold, we'll get to you first up when we come back. Jody Biasi, Jeremy White off today. This is WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This time it's going to be returned.
It is going to be returned.
And coming around the corner, Nakua breaks tackles. Can he make it to the sideline? He's got a chance. Can he beat the lineman? Will he get there?
Oh, don't tell me he stepped out of the two.
He's out. It looks like he's out of the three.
Don't tell me he stepped out of the 3-yard line.
Samson Nakua just ran 175 yards. 110 vertically, but you watch the route that he took and the blocks that are set up, so very close to flipping the field, turning it into points for the Saints. Comes up 3 yards short.
Some PTSD on that play. That is Samson Nakua, the brother of Puka Nakua, receiver for the Saints in the preseason. He caught a kick, a field goal, 109 yards away from a touchdown. He runs almost all the way. And a guy on the other team shoves his own player kind of into him, and he steps out of bounds right before. If you watch that play, and you're a Bills fan, and you're like a hardcore Bills fan, or you remember this play, you know the play I'm talking about. Terrence McGee. Same team. Saints. Terrence McGee. This guy, Nacua, almost like he's weaving and he's going from the left to the right. 109-yard return that comes up 2 yards short, 3 yards short. And I'm telling you, one of the most impressive plays I've ever seen in my life watching football is Terrence McGee's kick return at the end of the half against the Saints in like 2005, maybe 2006. He is making this guy miss, and he's making this guy miss. He's going right, he's going left. He just runs through everybody. It's like the most impressive kick return you've ever seen in your life. And then, is it his own teammate that trips him up at the end? Go look up the Terrence McGee Saints kick return. It's like the same. It's the same thing. It's so bad. He's so close. Anyways, 803-0550 is the phone number. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. Cut down day tomorrow for the Bills. And let's get connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Talking some trade ideas, too. Steve in Texas, next up. What's up, Steve?
Hey, just chiming in on the golf from before. Sure. I wanted to take a sit down on the uphill putt and the scramble because everybody sits there and just gives a side-eyed putt when you want to putt one that's 3 feet longer, but it's downhill, even though it's straighter. And nobody, half the people never even make it to the hole when they're doing the uphill putt, even though they think it's straighter. Just give me one where everybody can get it there.
But the downhill one, how many, especially like amateur golfers, are just blowing that thing by the hole?
But it's a scramble, so at least, you know, they're going to miss it anyway side to side, even on the uphill one. At least maybe they got a shot at making it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So you would take the downhill if it was closer?
Yeah, I'm going to take the downhill putt. We're not talking if it's, like, super wacky, like I'm putting it, you know, it's looking like I'm at Augusta, but, you know, the average downhill putt.
All right, I can respect that. I can respect that.
I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Steve.
You got it.
I would take the uphill putt. I wouldn't be so committed to it. Like, if Steve was my partner and he was like, we got to take the downhill. We got to take the downhill. I'd be like, all right, that's fine. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of getting it there. But putting is also one of the things I'm like, I can't chip to save my life. I can putt. Sometimes that makes up for it. Others, you know, might be the opposite. Thanks for the call. 803-0550 is the phone number. So we're getting into it on corner a little bit there and like trade ideas for the Bills. I mean, what would you want to trade a guy for right now? The Bills have defensive end depth, but I just don't think anybody makes sense to really deal there, right? Like, other than Kingsley Jonathan for a day three pick, maybe. I don't know what else you're really, I mean, are you trading? You're not trading AJ Epenesa, you know? So it comes down to receivers and, well, excuse me, it comes down to your corner room. And if you want to move somebody to flip talent to another position, like, I'm not trying to rush Kyrie Elam off the stage here. Like I said, someone tweet that at me. They're like, oh, Kyrie Elam finally starts showing signs of life and we want to deal him. I get that. I totally get that. There is a want for sure to see Kyrie Elam develop into a real player. He is the closest thing to a bust that the Bills have had under Brandon Bean when you look at their first round picks. Nobody wants that to be a failure. You want to see it work. And I think fans were getting a little excited when they started hearing, like, okay, at training camp, he's looking good. Day after day, he was making plays. And then the preseason showed up, and he was pretty good. You know, like, if you look at corner and what you got in the preseason. There are a couple different ways to look at it. I would want to look at two things. One, how often were you targeted? And two, how successful was the team when they did target you? And Elam, for example, in the preseason, had 40 coverage snaps. 40 times he was covering somebody in the preseason. And out of those 40, how many times did the other team throw at him? The answer, three. Three times out of 40 they threw at him. And of those three, they caught two for 10 yards. So on 40 coverages, Elam was only targeted three times, gave up two catches for 10 yards. That's it. That is impressive. That is good. He was not being picked on at all. If you gave me that in the regular season, you'd take it 100 times out of 100. A guy that they're not going at him. Most of the time, that's because you're doing a good job covering. For comparison, to Corey Couch, who Sal just said he kind of likes as a practice squad guy, or maybe bottom end of the roster, but more likely practice squad. To Corey Couch, had 62 coverages in the preseason. He was targeted 13 times. More than double the rate of a Kyrie Elam. And the team targeting Corey Couch was successful because he was targeted 13 times. The opposing team caught the ball 12 of the 13 for 136 yards. So that's what kind of the opposite end of the spectrum looks like. So Elam was good. Elam was very good in the preseason. He was not making these splash plays like he was in training camp, but you can't really make splash plays if they're never throwing the ball at you. That's part of, you know, what makes him an intriguing corner in the first place. That's normally not what he's like. Normally he is a guy they pick on, but preseason, you know, preseason pledge is not always the same. Daquan Hardy, cool little story he's become. Sixth round pick. He's going to be the returner, it looks like, and he played well at corner. He had a stat line not like Elam and not like Couch, who I just mentioned too. Daquan Hardy, 64 coverages in the preseason. He was targeted 10 times. That's a lot. That's a good amount. Every sixth time they were throwing at him. That's a pretty high rate. But the opposite was true of Hardy. The team targeting him didn't have success because of those 10 times he was targeted, he only allowed two catches for 13 yards. Really good. So when I get to Elam, like Elam, by the way, I've been an Elam, would you call me an Elam truther over the years? I trust the numbers on him. And the numbers on Kyer Elam are good. It just happens in a different way than what we're all used to watching the Bills the last 5 years, because I don't really know of another corner that has kind of been like this for them. Rasul Douglas a little bit, but Douglas didn't make the mistakes. But he was also playing at like an all-pro level. Elam, target percentage, how often he's targeted, same as Benford. Yards per target given up, better than Benford. Missed tackle percentage, better than Benford. Penalties taken, better than Benford. Interception rate per target, twice as good as Benford. And I think Christian Benford's a darn good cornerback. Elam's got the same production. He just does it in a different way, I think. And the Bills have been frustrated by that, and I think it makes him seem less trustworthy, but I don't know. If you're getting the same results at the end of the day, I don't know if I really care how it happens. If, sure, you're going to give up an extra big play here and there than the other guy, but you're going to stop a play from happening that the other guy can't more often, then to me, if that evens out at the end of the day, why do I care which plays went the way they should? I guess is the point. So I've always kind of been a defender of Elam. I don't need to rush him off the team. I don't want to trade him. But it's more a reaction to, wow, their corners look good. I think sitting here right now, I would say this, that I think their second strongest position after quarterback is corner. Of the whole roster right now, You ask me, what's their second best position group? I would say cornerback. Given that Douglas just played at an all-pro level, Benford, I think, is a legitimate, great starting corner. I think Elam is a good starting corner that just does it a different way. And Jamarcus Ingram's out here looking good, and Daquan Hardy's out here looking good, and Taron Johnson is an all-pro. Don't forget about your nickelbacks. Taron Johnson might be the best in the league at what he does, and then you've got Cam Lewis behind him, and that's fine. A corner, they're tremendous at corner. It's not that I hate Kyrie Elam and want him off the team. I see a roster that's got holes. And I see a position that has a surplus. And in theory, if you could somehow take that surplus and trade it in to fill a hole at another position, well, that sounds pretty good to me. It's easier said than done. You got to find the right player. You got to find the right team. You maybe got to find the right draft pick, compensation, going back and forth. But it's less of Elam should be traded because he's terrible. It's more of they've got holes at a lot of spots, and Elam is to me a good player right now that is not needed. He is a good player that is not currently needed because they have a bunch of other guys at his position that are all looking pretty good right now. And maybe, just maybe, you could get something of value for him that's real because of a good camp, a good preseason, and if you want to show that other team the numbers, then you might actually get something. In terms of what you would get, I've looked at the receiver list around the league. I think he's too good for Treylon Burks. Someone asked me about Treylon Burks on Twitter. He's in Tennessee still, first-round pick of a couple years ago, has done nothing in the league. I wouldn't do that. I think Burks is probably bad. And Elam's done more than he has in the league. Dotson would have made sense, but he's already gone. I got another idea tweeted in about Jameson Williams, because he was a first-round pick that has not done anything in the league. That's been more because of injury, though. And Detroit wouldn't do that. They haven't seen him really yet. And they're entrusting him at the moment to be the number two receiver. So it's not a bad idea, because what you're going for here is, I get it. Hey, look, a first-round receiver that hasn't done anything. Can I swap my corner that was a first-round pick that hasn't done a lot for a receiver that hasn't? Maybe there's another example out there, but I don't see an obvious one. And I don't think Williams makes sense because Detroit needs him. 803-0550 is the phone number. Rob in Toronto, if you hang on hold, we'll get to you right when we come back. Coming up here on WGR. Let's go right to the phones. Rob in Toronto next up. Morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good.
Love the banter. So, with regards to the cornerback room, yeah, I mean, we're deep there. It's been, you know, talked about that, Elam, you know, it's not his strength playing in a McDermott system. But, I mean, the kid's shown some flashes. He's still, what, still a young guy.
23.
I don't know. Sometimes you get late bloomers. With regards to the golf, so scramble format, is there any better jubilation than the fourth putter in your group after three people have just missed a putt that you know you should make, absolutely stepping up and making it? Or if you're in a group and let's say one player isn't exactly the same handicap as others and goes first putting, and all of a sudden they get on a hot streak, the look on their face when they start making putts in a group is, I don't know, you can't make up that feeling.
Yes. Yeah.
And the last comment I would say is, have you ever played in a Chapman format?
Is that the one we had Brian Koziel on earlier? Is that the one where you all hit your drives, you pick the best drive?
So, no, that's a Texas scramble. So it's kind of like a Texas scramble and alternate shot got married. So both players hit their tee shots. So typically it's a two-person format. Both players hit their tee shot.
Yep.
and then you pick which one you want to play, and then you play alternate shot in from there.
Yes.
And it is ruthless. It's difficult. Is there anything worse in golf than playing alternate shot and your partner absolutely rips one down the middle, and then you lay a piece of sod over it?
Yes.
Alternate shot is definitely one of the most, I don't know, knee-knocking formats. So I appreciate the banter. And, if you ever get a chance to play in a Chapman format, I'm telling you, you should try it, because it's like a scramble and alternate shot had a love child.
I like it. Thanks, Rob, for the call. Yes, Jeremy's played in a format like that. Jeremy's played in a tournament with a format like that. So I had heard of that before, and that is ruthless because, right, there's nothing worse than letting – there's the opposite there. The best is, as Rob mentioned, you're the fourth person in a scramble, and you've all missed a putt, and you make it. That is – what a feeling. If you are screwing up your teammate's shots or their hole because you're doing alternate shot or you're letting them – just that's the worst. And that format that Rob just mentioned, Chapman or whatever, invites that. 803, thanks for the call, Rob. 803-0550 is the phone number. When we come back, go through the Bills roster, trade ideas from a couple more people that tweeted in. Someone tweeted in, I finally got a tweet of a trade idea that I like, that the Bills could actually make. I think could actually be on the table for them. That, when we come back, if you got a favorite golf format that beats the two-man scramble, have at it. And I got a James Cook point to get to that pertains to fantasy. If you got a fantasy draft coming up and you're thinking about James Cook, I got a thought for you. All that ahead, 9 o'clock hour when we return. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy off today. This is WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.